You're listening to the Business Artist Podcast. I am Jan Melhoz, and today my guest is David Lange. David is the co-founder and CEO of Adlicious. Adlicious is a programmatic marketing agency. We will come into explaining what programmatic is. And they work with a high number of e-commerce clients, mainly driving their customer acquisition, customer retention in many countries, in many industries. David is a very interesting person, and I'm happy to introduce him. Hello, David. How are you doing?
Hi, Jan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So can you give us a short description about your background? How did you end up running a digital marketing agency?
That's a very good question. It's quite hard to answer in just one or two sentences, but let me try. So My brother founded a music streaming company in Cologne in Germany about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was called Simfy. I think now it has been acquired by Deezer already. I think, Jan, you know it because you have a music background. Yes. And we've always been, you know, sitting together at the family table back then. And when I was going to university, he was in the middle of, you know, ramping this thing up. Mm-hmm. And I was always, like, you know, really close to founding in the digital space, and I found it really interesting. But at first, I didn't pursue the same, you know, goal and to start a digital company as well by my own. But it more or less developed when I finished my studies. So I started studying Chinese, actually. I have a Chinese major. Mm-hmm. And I lived in China for a couple of years. I lived in Hangzhou. That's basically now where all the corona thing starts. I find it's next to Wuhan. I'm glad I was there a couple of years before now. But I was in Hangzhou. It's, you know, it's one of these mid-tier cities that you don't know if you haven't been in China usually, but it has, like, I don't know, I think now it's 10 million, 8 to 10 million people living there. Yes. It's like a mid-tier city for Chinese standards.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yes. I've been there, and I've been in Beijing, Peking, the main capital. Mm-hmm. And I've studied there. I've also worked there for an internship for a company. It was all really interesting. It was nice. I had a lot of great experiences, but I always knew that China, or like Chinese studies, you know, cultural studies and language, something that interests me, you know, it's personality development. Mm-hmm. But it's not entirely something that I want to focus my on. So I went on studying in Germany, back in Germany in 2010. Mm-hmm. And did my economics master. And during that time, obviously, you know, getting in touch with business perspectives, people who are more interested in economics and business matters. That's where I started to build my network for founding the company. Also meeting really interesting people and started internships in that area, in the digital area, in the startup area in Hamburg. And through these connections, I got my first job in 2013, and I had basically two contracts in front of me, you know, when I finished the university. One was in a super old school Hamburg based Asian consultancy, you know, there were these Germans or like European people running around in Asia consulting people about like, you know, stuff, how to ramp up your business in Asia. Mm-hmm. And the other company was a programmatic media agency, one of the first programmatic media agencies in Germany. Mm-hmm. And, you know, two completely different fields. Mm-hmm. And I can still see myself sitting in front of these contracts and thinking which way to choose, you know, because they were completely different ways. One was predetermined more or less, because if you start in one of these old school consultancies, you would, you know, need to continue the path in order to ramp up the career ladder. But for media and programmatic, it was all new, all exciting, and it was something you could try out, and then after 2 or 3 years, maybe do something else. So that was also the reason why I said, okay, I'm going to do the more flexible way. And that's how I got myself into the programmatic business. Mm-hmm. And then I was working there for 1.5 years until mid-2014. Mm-hmm. And I saw the huge potential of the whole programmatic marketing area. And I basically partnered up with one of my best colleagues back then, and we founded Adlicious. Mm-hmm. And now I'm sitting here after, I think now it's 6 years. And we have our team here.
30 people or something?
30 people, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's, I think it's quite rare nowadays. It used to be the way maybe 100 years ago when people started businesses that you first make revenues, profits, and then from these profits build your company organically. Mm-hmm. This is also how we did it. I know it sometimes just doesn't work out, if you need to hire 20 developers in order to build your software. And then, being able to generate revenues, that's something else, obviously. But in our agency business model, it was different. We didn't have to invest ahead so much until we could make first revenues. So that helped us, obviously, to organically grow. And now we're at this point where we still don't have any investors, no one from outside telling us what to do. So we have a great deal of freedom in our way of running the business, which is really great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And if you have no investors, I think that's the best thing that could happen, because you really have total own decision making. So before we come really into programmatic marketing, what did you learn in your time in China about China, which people who just know it from the news might not know, or might not have the awareness for?
Mm-hmm. So when I was in China, that was 2008 to 2010. Mm-hmm. China was probably much different than today. I haven't been to China actually ever since. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I still follow everything they do, obviously, in the media, but I haven't been to China after I left in 2010. But what I realized back then was that the Chinese people are super eager to develop, and all aspects of life, personally, economically, mm-hmm. and they really, you could really see that. There's, this hunger for more. Mm-hmm. And that's something that distinguishes them a lot from, at least from German people. So I live in Hamburg, I live in a nice neighborhood of Hamburg, in these areas, people are basically, they have enough of everything, just life can't get any better, basically. So they don't take the extra step, they don't do the extra mile to continue, and they don't see that all around. Themselves, people develop at a much higher speed, and technology develops at a much higher speed. And I've seen this basically in China. So that's something I took away from, and I would definitely tell everyone who hasn't been to China yet, it's a great way to understand how the world more or less develops at a certain speed, which we are not used to at this point.
Yeah. And I assume that you maybe try to bring the spirit into Adlicious as well.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. So it's quite funny, but I've seen this also reflected in my team more or less, because when I hire people from private universities, out of from the upper class, more or less, if you can say so, these people tend not to be as successful as people who haven't had these opportunities yet, who needed to make their own life more or less, earn everything they got by themselves. These people tend to be more they value more what they get. And they are more motivated developing further, because they understand that in order to get something in life, you need to invest yourself in that. So that's something I've actually seen my team as well. It's quite funny. I didn't realize it until the last 2 or 3 years, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I definitely saw the same. I know it mainly from the music business, where when I started, for example, at BMG, there were lots of people from universities with like degrees. But the ones who really, you know, made a huge career often were the ones who didn't have even a degree or just came in there because they had high passion for music. And those people often, you know, then signed the biggest artists or became managers of huge artists. Or were like big CEOs as well. So I saw the same thing happening.
Yes.
But I only started in music, so I thought that's maybe a music business thing.
No, I think it's a society business issue. So, I mean, I think it's always, you know, always a matter of how deep you can fall in times of, you know, no success. Mm-hmm. And if you understand that actually there's no way you can fall that deep, that it hurts, you won't be too motivated to change anything at this point of time, you know, or really take the extra step to make something happen. Obviously, it's not a rule that applies to everyone, you know. I had an okay life, I would say, but I still I'm motivated to make my own way. Something I've experienced at certain cases, you know, during my professional life. Yeah.
Of course, I mean, those people can still learn, you know, if somebody has this, you know, attitude and rather, you know, doesn't go the extra mile, doesn't try to improve, but then sees it with others, it's still possible that those people change as well. That's what I'm trying with my podcast as well, to, you know, give them the awareness to grow, to have a growth mindset, basically.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing. Good mission.
Thank you. So now let's go into this magic thing of programmatic marketing. So not everybody knows what it is, but it's very powerful, very efficient, and it can grow a company with no investment and two people just leaving their jobs into an international agency with 30 people in just a few years. So what is the magic behind it? Why is it so powerful?
So I would say we wouldn't be able to write the same story again if we would have found it today. Mm-hmm. So I think the timing was key. We started, like I said, 2014. And so the whole programmatic marketing, advertising industry started obviously in the US in 2010, 2011, I would say on a significant scale. There were always, you know, some innovators, some idealists who already started working on this technology before, but bringing it to a market standard where everyone, you know, takes part at least to some extent, started in 2011, and then it swapped over to Europe, and in Germany I think it started in 2012, 2013, and we started in 2014, which was still early enough to have this, you know, kind of green field where you can organically grow in the end. You don't have to have investors to outperform your 1,000 or 100,000 competitors just by investing more money than everyone else. So that was key. And yeah, if you come back to the programmatic advertising thing itself, how would you describe it? So programmatic is more or less the technology disruption of media buying, of the way you do, you know, advertising, digital advertising, obviously, at this point, traditionally, because 10 years ago, if you wanted to run a digital marketing campaign, and you wanted to, you know, have your ads run on different publishers, you always had to go to these publishers and, you know, call them, you know, write, send them a fax. I think that's the English word, right? You would have to do a lot of manual work in order to get your ads to run on these publisher sites. And with programmatic, this basically all goes away. You have an ecosystem of different software components, which in milliseconds arrange your ad to be run on a site backed by data-driven decisions. And you can basically more or less automatically steer your campaigns through a single layer of technology across all possible publisher platforms that are available.
And what is the advantage to do that instead of calling the publisher and booking in the ad? Because you can still do that today.
Yes, yes, you can. But it becomes less and less common and available. So the main advantage, obviously, is time, right? You don't spend so much time anymore on negotiating deals with single publishers. And resources, you know, you can spend elsewhere are obviously better than spending them on the phone talking to someone. And the second thing is also that you know, in a digital advertising world where you have like a lot of marketing channels, you know, the customer journey, you know, a user who runs through all these channels until he or she buys, mm-hmm. Is becoming more and more fragmented, mm-hmm. and therefore it's obviously if you run all these publisher sites and you do it traditionally, you have all these silos, that's how we call them. You know, you have publisher A, you have publisher B, you have publisher C, and you book all your campaigns with them, but they don't speak to each other, obviously, because they hate each other, because you know they compete for your budgets. And if one of your clients, of your users, you know, runs through all these different publishers until he or she buys, then you don't have this full picture of where actually the performance came from, because publisher A says, hey, listen, I brought you a conversion. Publisher B also says, hey, I brought you a conversion, and so on. Through programmatic, you have all this in your own system, and you can actually see where this user comes from and what customer journey he has taken, and what publishers are maybe more valuable to your customer journey, which aren't, and therefore you can optimize on a much better decision setup, you know, backed by data, and you can just optimize much better towards your goals. That's basically the two main points. Obviously, there are much more, but I think it would not fit into our session.
No, but I think in general we can say that the company who wants to advertise, they can be sure that the ad runs in all relevant sites, basically, and it's targeted towards their target group without mm-hmm. them having to do a lot of research who fits and do like focus groups and stuff.
Yes, exactly. And it also brings more transparency into an advertiser's media buying mm-hmm. chain, you know, because if you approach a publisher and say, hey, listen, I want to book your placements, then you know they tell you a price and then you have to take it or not. But through programmatic, there's this, I would say, it's like a market mechanism, you know, there's demand and there's supply, mm-hmm. and you know, whoever it is, however it develops, you know, a price is being found in the middle. So that's basically the whole idea of economics, right? And it's being brought into media buying. So you will get a much better CPM in the end for your placements. Mm-hmm. And you will also much better understand how much a certain publisher actually can charge for that traffic they have on their sites.
Yes. So nowadays, as you said, 2020, programmatic marketing is kind of established. Many companies have their own programmatic marketing teams now. Why mm-hmm. do they still, although they have their own people, why do they still use you as an agency?
That's a very good question. So I think number one reason being that although there are a lot of programmatic media agencies out there now, the level of quality actually differs a lot. So everyone can say they are programmatic, you know. You could tomorrow, you know, ramp up a website and say you are a programmatic media agency, you run programmatic campaigns, you could try to get access to a DSP. I think there are a lot of DSPs out there. You know, DSPs are these softwares that you use as a media buyer, as an advertiser, to run your campaigns. And then you could basically say, hey, listen, I do programmatic, who wants to test with me? You know, it's no problem at all. So you need to have a name, you know, you have to build your brand that you actually know what you're doing, because programmatic isn't I'm setting up this campaign and then I push play and then I lean back and everything just optimizes automatically. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the number one point, that people, at least in Germany and Europe, understand that we do significant stuff in the industry. The second being that we are independent. So I think most agencies are either part of a bigger agency network or are part of a technology player or do have investors, you know, who make crazy decisions to, you know, just in, for the sake of short-term growth. I think that's always a great pitch, which has worked really well for us, saying that we are agnostic to everything we do and we are independent. So that's the second one. And the third one is that we actually have software and products that are unique in the market. So, but that's kind of new. So we're also developing, obviously, and that's like the latest USP we have earned ourselves.
So that's a good point, because so now when we say programmatic marketing is now established, so what would somebody who founds a company in 2020 would do, or what are you doing now to disrupt your own business and have the new product or the new offer again for the next century, for the next decade, sorry. Centuries maybe a bit long.
Yes. So, 6 years ago, it was enough to say we do programmatic and we know what we do, because back then there was not, no significant competition in the market. But nowadays, this doesn't really work anymore. You have, advertisers have also different levels of expertise in-house, so they know much better about programmatic and about the digital advertising industry. Still, at some cases, it's quite astonishing how few they know, taking into account how important this whole thing is for their company. But still, on average, the expertise level goes up, and therefore we are also demanded to deliver products that are more sophisticated than they were a couple of years ago. And so exactly the pitch back then was just, us the people who were just better than our competitors. Nowadays, we have to generate product USPs, where we can say, listen, we have dynamic capabilities with our own tech stack that no one else has because of A, B, C, D. And then this also, the expertise level on the advertiser side also helps us to bring, across our message, because it's gotten a bit more complicated, more technical. But these people on the other side, they tend to understand it better and better. And that's also my recommendation for anyone who's interested in starting in this area is to actually really gain such a deep understanding of the market that you also, that you actually enable yourself to come up with product ideas that are superior to others. Because programmatic is a field where you could, like I said, tomorrow start a business and just start a business. But to really understand the market, really understand, how things connect to each other, how software connects to each other, how Google dominates the market, obviously, but also doesn't dominate it in some areas because they just, due to, internal constraints they have, they won't overcome for the next 5-10 years. There are some posted some areas in programmatic where you can develop your own products and merge it with what's in the market from Google, from Facebook, from Amazon also, and make something, great and better out of it. That's the real thing. And that's where you have to have a deep understanding of the market in order to come up with products.
So how can one develop, let's say somebody has just finished studies or maybe they didn't even study, because I don't think you necessarily have to study for this. So how can they find out stuff about the market? Where do they go? Are there online courses or how do they get this information?
You have to read. You have to read a lot. You have to talk to people. You have to... I think you have to have a combination of media knowledge, how media buying is generally done, and also how it was done in the earlier days, because we're still not talking about 100%, you know, software development or IT stuff. It's still also media. So, and you also have to understand actually brand building, which is also another very, very important topic. Mm-hmm. I wanted to address here, because it's media at one point, how, you know, publishers, advertisers, all, you know, work together, address each other and collaborate. Then it's tech, DSPs, SSPs, ad servers, DMPs, data platforms, you know, and so on. There's a lot of stuff going on in the market. Then there's the data privacy thing, which is more like, you know, legal. Mm-hmm. And then you also have whole brand building block, which you need to understand. Now, what makes brands successful? Because in the end, you're always talking about customer acquisition. You're talking about CPA, CPO, CPC, CPM.
Can you explain shortly for listeners what it means?
Yeah, of course. So CPO is a cost per order, which means it just basically says how much you pay for an order in your online shop or whatever business you have. Mm-hmm. A CPC is the cost per click, and the CPM is the cost per mil, stating the unit cost of 1,000 ad impressions that you serve. So it always starts with impressions, then it comes to clicks, and then it hopefully comes to conversions and orders. But I have seen during the last 6 years that people tend to, you know, completely focus on what they can measure in online. So it's great that you can measure everything online, but it's also it can also be dangerous, because you tend to focus too much on performance and you forget your brand building. And brand building is something you cannot really measure. Take for example IKEA. You know, in the retail business, in the retail area, they don't compete with all these Poco, Möbelroller, German discount retail furniture players. They basically just invest in their brand, you know, by communicating, you know, their purpose, why they're there, you know, just not price driven, not product driven, but more, you know, about the brand, you know, what it means, you know, what does IKEA mean, basically. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but that's what brand building is about. And when you look at revenue, top line revenue growth of all these furniture companies, you can see that IKEA is the one who does the best job and grows most, also with H&M in retail, mm-hmm. in the fashion industry. It's the same with all these companies who completely focus on performance. So long story short, I think there are many different building blocks of this whole programmatic space, and you, in order to really, really do something great in this industry, you need to consider them all.
Yes, I mean, with the brand building, I can 100% support it. With the e-commerce company I worked with and work with, you can see this. If the brand awareness is high, then of course the CPM, CPC, what you said, this is normal, but then for the conversions, you see the difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, make three times, four times lower CPA. So cost per acquisition than when you have a low brand or nobody knows.
Yes. Brand. Yes. So yeah, I'm not saying that performance marketing is dead or shouldn't be done. It's super important, you know, super important. But I mean, 50%, 60% of our clients are also performance driven. They, you know, we do performance campaigns with them, and we need to, you know, generate orders and everything. I know in the end, it's about making revenue. So performance marketing is super important, but it's just one part of the whole brand building mix, you know. And I've seen this also with a lot of Berlin startups. That's like the number one problem, I would say, for their marketing activities, is that I think it generates out of the reason that there are investors, you know, sitting in the board, and they don't really have a lot of knowledge about brand building. They just want to see the numbers, you know. They have invested their money, they get monthly controlling reports about the numbers, and we know what suits more in you know, backing your marketing decisions by saying, hey, I've spent like A amount of money and I've generated B amount of conversions out of this. And now I'm building this scalable model where you need to, invest more money and then I will, take this to the next step. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work like this because you can't scale a business into the sky just by running performance marketing campaigns. There's like the competition online is so fierce and more companies compete for the same user and bring the prices, increase the prices dramatically. So you have to find different ways, more innovative ways to actually address your user on a more emotional level. That's also what advertising is for, and programmatic can do a lot in this area. This is something we advocate. So programmatic is not 100% about performance. It's about addressing a user on a one-to-one basis and also already helping on the brand building side and then going down the funnel until someone buys. So that's what we are doing at the moment, and that's what our interesting projects actually look like at the moment.
So is the creative part also getting more important, like the production of the banners, of the videos, the way they are produced, the message? Is that also part of your business? Or
yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. That's a very good point. So you would be amazed of what significant brands send us over in terms of creative materials before we would collaborate with them. Static JPEG banners, it's like, I was ask yourself, like if you've been a user, a potential customer, if you look at this banner, would you be excited to buy at this place or not? No, and obviously the answer is always no. But when you sit on the sides of the brands, you always at least this was a couple of changes, but 2 or 3 years ago it was just a pure building, like a cost block, building banners, like creative materials, content that you can advertise with, it was seen completely as a cost block. So we need to bring the costs down as much as possible. And that thankfully changes. We have also seen this being more and more important in our campaigns. So we have ramped up an in-house creative team here. Mm-hmm. I think it will be probably the largest team we will have in the next 2 or 3 years here, the units inside the company. Yeah. We have already like 6-7 people just completely working only on creative materials for our campaigns, for our clients. Mm-hmm. Because you have the technical possibilities to address your potential clients more or less on a one-to-one basis, as I just said, and you also have a more comprehensive view on your customer journey, right? So through programmatic, so you should take this advantage and make use out of it by actually taking storytelling in place, I'm serving them creative materials, banners that actually deliver a message that makes sense and that looks nice, just to make it, put it bluntly. So one of our projects, for example, might be interesting for people listening, is that we are now bringing dynamic prospecting into market, like real dynamic prospecting. So you all probably know dynamic retargeting. When you go to a shop and you look at some, like a pair of shoes, and then you don't buy it and you leave the page, you go check the weather, or read an online magazine, you suddenly see the pair of shoes you've just seen in the shop somewhere, in the banner.
That's the Zalando model.
That's exactly the Zalando model. That's called dynamic retargeting. You insert dynamically content into a banner that you have seen or that the brand thinks you should see. That's dynamic retargeting. It's quite easy to set up because you have a definite data point about what to show in the display banner, the things you've seen, period. But if you want to take this to the next level and show someone things they are interested in, but these people have never been to your site before, that's the real deal, you know. That's where we are trying to go, because obviously that's super interesting for everyone. It's interesting for the user, for the potential customer, it's interesting for the brand, and it's also interesting for us because we generate much better campaigns out of it. So but it's technically super demanding to create something that's like a dynamic display banner that's addressing users in the upper funnel. And but we're getting there, and I think we are going live very soon with this project. And I think that's where the market is going, and that's also where the market needs to go.
It's not many people, not many agencies offering this right now, right?
No, actually, there are some. You know, Google Ads has a dynamic capability somehow, but there are lots of limitations in there, and you only get access to the Google inventory. You know, in order to come up with something that has this connection between your different target groups and then the products that are being shown in the display banners. That's the number one issue that you have to overcome. And then the access, not only to Google inventory, but to all inventory available out there. That's the second one. And also something, you know, it's just like tiny questions or like, you know, devil lies in the detail. That's how you would say. If you see a user and you show them a display ad, but you at some point don't really know what you should put in the banner, you need to have a recommendation engine that actually machine learning based decides, okay, at this point I don't really have any significant data points about this user, but what do I show it, because I can't show, like, you know, a blank display banner. And you know, that's the stuff we need to find answers for, and that's what we're working on.
That's really interesting, and that's exactly where it's going to go, I think. So that's a good point to go more into the future. So let's maybe look 10, 20 years. Machine learning is far more sophisticated. Big data is far more sophisticated, that you not only gather all the data, but also use it efficiently. What do you think, where are we going to? How will marketing look in 10, 20 years? And where will it catch people? How will it catch people? How is the customer journey? What do you think?
That's a super tough question. I wish I had the answer. So I would say that if, in case, you know, politics, governments don't interfere at some point, Google, Facebook, maybe, and definitely also Amazon will completely dominate the market. Mm-hmm. So that's point number one. Point number two being that cookies, you know, I don't know if anyone doesn't know what a cookie is, but I think now everyone does, you know, the scripts that make targeting actually available, were stored in your browser. And these things will all die out, basically out of privacy issues, and also the concentration towards, you know, the platforms I've just mentioned. And instead it will be replaced, I guess, by how do you call it? I would call it now, like today, platform IDs. So Google will have their own set of IDs, Amazon will have their own set, Facebook will have their own set, and they will be able to match all the users who are running in their system back and forth, and make, you know, targeting actually available. It won't happen through cookies anymore, it will happen through platform IDs.
So you can't delete it anymore, like the cookies?
No, you cannot. Except you are willing to not use any Google or Amazon services anymore, which I highly doubt. But I think that's the only way to not be in this title mix. But also, I'm not sure if someone really wants to, you know, browse the internet and see ads that are completely useless and doesn't interest them because they, you know, are not targeted. that's also something you should talk about. Obviously, ad blockers and stuff you can use. They do work to some extent, but then I guess you will have to pay in the midterm for everything you consume, you know, because journalists obviously need to be paid. They're already underpaid, but they will obviously not work for free. So yeah, we will see how this ends. But that's on the, you know, technical tracking side. Mm-hmm. And okay, I run a programmatic media agency. It's easier for me to say, but I'm very confident and very sure that programmatic will take over completely. Mm-hmm. Right now you have, so if you run a programmatic media agency, you have display as a number one channel to run programmatically. Video is also super important. Mm-hmm. There are some more channels coming up right now, which are also interesting. One being audio. Mm-hmm. So you can run programmatic audio campaigns through digital radios, and obviously also Spotify being one of the top publishers in the audio industry. That's very interesting because it's, you know, marketing at a completely different level. It's, you know, your message is being transported through voice and not through pictures anymore. So that's super interesting. Also interesting is the whole out of home area, mm-hmm. digital out of home. It's starting right now, but it's definitely not programmatic right now. Some agencies say it's programmatic because they want to sell the campaigns, you know, and just, you know, you can say A and then in the end you do B, but no one really cares, or not, brands won't understand that it's not entirely programmatic. We like to be honest, and I can definitely tell you that out of home is not programmatic at all at the moment. But
just to explain shortly, digital out of home is basically when you see like normally you've seen like a big advertisement at your, I don't know, local shopping center outside, and now you have it in screens basically, which you can book into the screens very often already.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so the German listeners here will still know what a Litfaßsäule is.
Yes.
That was the first out-of-home, yeah. Out-of-home screen, more or less. And now it has developed into, you know, digital moving images already. You can see it at some points, but it's not programmatic yet. But, you know, just, you know, we're having an outlook here. So I think out-of-home is becoming programmatic, mm-hmm. in the future. Also TV, obviously, is still number one channel in the world. It's definitely decreasing. It's funny because TV stations, you know, their reach decreases, but their prices increase. But I think, this is just a short-term development.
Maybe Netflix will be possible, or Amazon Prime and stuff.
Yes. So exactly. We will see what Netflix does, if they still being ad-free in the future. I don't know. I seriously don't know. But there's other online stuff, right, which is coming up. DAZN is super big now in terms of sports. I think if someone, you know, likes to watch football, soccer, it's a pain in the ass to find the one service provider that covers them all. It's a super disrupted industry right now. I think if you want to watch all games available, would have to sign up to four or five different service providers at least in order to be able to see everything. I think my co-founder yesterday told me about a company that has raised 2 billion, like Milliarden in German. I was super surprised. They haven't generated a single dollar of revenue yet, but they have raised 2 billion. I think it's backed by Steven Spielberg, and they are, you know, trying to build this new online streaming service that's completely, it's mobile first, and you know, it's just an example of what, you know, German and European and also obviously all traditional global TV stations need to be aware of, that the way we consume online video dramatically changes. And I think that's the number one interesting development during the next 10 to 20 years, online video or the whole TV area. I think it's going to be super disrupted.
And storytelling, I think, is getting bigger and bigger as well, right?
Yes. So storytelling is more or less the result of what we can now do, because we break silos. You know, we have a more user, customer centralized approach of marketing. We're still not there, but it's getting better. And now we have the technical capabilities more or less to do storytelling mm-hmm. to some extent. And that's interesting. Yeah, definitely.
Great. Yeah, that was a fantastic insight into something everybody has heard who works, let's say, in the e-commerce business at least, but many people don't know what it really means. So thanks a lot, David, for that. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, and maybe he's the marketing manager at a company, or maybe he wants to have an internship at Delicious, how can mm-hmm. they contact you? Or can they find you on the net?
They can just write me an email, drop me an email anytime. It's david@delicious.me. Mm-hmm. And I'd be happy to receive many emails and just exchange about stuff. And yeah, obviously we're also, you know, in the war for talents. And if anyone thinks they should come here for whatever work, please drop me a line.
Perfect. I will put the link in the script of the podcast. And I can only recommend, if you want to go into programmatic, we talked about the best way. I think going to Delicious is a very good way to do your first steps.
Or maybe yes, I think, I think what you shouldn't do is just, you know, read like, I don't know, one or two articles and then, you know, ramp up a website and try to get a DSP access and take it from there. I think you'll burn a lot of money and you'll burn a lot of brands also. So the best way to do it is to learn at you know, someone's, you know, just go to a company that knows what they're doing and learn there. It's something I've done as well. Mm-hmm. And that's something I would recommend as well.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, David. That was really interesting. Let's do that again in a year or so and update everybody on the new developments in the market. And I hope it was very valuable for our listeners. If you want to have a 15-minute call with me, you can book it on my website, janmellows.com. I will listen to your case and give you my advice on your personal business situation. Thank you for listening. Thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jan. Yeah.